Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. Long time ago, 15 years ago, we had a caller from Colorado Springs. And back then, Bob Enyart Live was on in about 80 cities from Honolulu to Orlando, Florida. And she said on her local public TV station, she just saw a great documentary video like Nova, only it was indicating that evolution cannot be true, that there's a designer, that intelligent design explains life. So I told her that she's obviously mistaken. She was watching a different channel. And she was a great caller. And she said, no, I got the title of the film. It's called Unlocking the Mystery of Life. And I just refused to believe it. Well, it turns out, of course, she was correct. And the film was produced by Illustra Media. And so Illustra is related to the Discovery Institute out in Seattle. And we've interviewed many of their scientists. And the Institute tends to be, well, it is, I think, officially old Earth, but anti-Darwinist worldview. And we here are biblical creationists, young Earth creationists, but we interview their scientists because they're just so great. And there's a lot that we agree with. And so over the years, we've begun selling their videos, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, The Privileged Planet, Darwin's Dilemma, Flight, The Genius of Birds, Metamorphosis. And these are on DVD and Blu-ray. And so yesterday, my producer and I, Larry Wolf, we sat down to watch the latest film, Living Waters. This film. I mean, we wanted to get up on the coffee table and start dancing. This is how great. This film was one of the best intelligent design films ever produced. And so what an honor it is, humbling, in fact, but to have on Real Science Radio, the producer and director, Ladd Allen. Ladd, welcome to Real Science Radio.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Ladd, you probably just heard that. We love your film. It's tremendous.
Well, that's even better news. We want people to love the films. We put an awful lot into them, and it's very gratifying and encouraging to hear when people are moved by the message and what we're trying to do.
I know that you've just begun screening them. Could you tell us how's the reception been at your first screenings?
Yeah, it's been great. We had a premiere in San Antonio on September 10th, and there were about 1,700 people in attendance, and beautiful venue, great theater. Big. It's always fun to see it on a big screen with great sound.
And
just went great, and then on last Friday, I was in Seattle, and Discovery Institute hosted a premiere there, and the response was, again, really terrific. And so we're just really, we finished the film at the end of June, and we're just really beginning to promote it heavily now. We'll continue on the next couple of months to do that.
So, Ladd, Real Science Radio will be contacting your distributor to add that to our online store, but we couldn't urge enough our audience members, if you're listening to this, you want to get a copy of Living Waters. It's absolutely thrilling. And hopefully during our interview, Ladd Allen, we'll talk a little bit about dolphins and sea turtles and salmon and the humpback whale. But also earlier today, I was speaking with David Coppedge. He's a friend of Real Science Radio. And I love seeing his name in the credits as an associate producer. And he said that we shouldn't fail to talk about some of the stories of making the film.
Well, Dave has been just a tremendous part of what we've been doing for many years. And he's one of the great researchers on the planet. Mm. And he does a yeoman's job. When we get into these things, we really seek out cutting-edge, state-of-the-art research, the best that's available. And he just does a terrific job of finding that and then breaking it down and interpreting it. We do a lot of elaborate computer animations and show how these biological systems work, and very instrumental in pulling together the research and for that development of those sequences.
Well, and we should probably plug his website, crev.info.
Yeah, absolutely.
C-R-E-V, like creationevolution.info. He's so great at being on top of the daily breaking news.
He is, and I don't know how he does it. I don't know when he sleeps.
Yeah.
I mean, he reads every major journals, the major scientific journals that come out every month, reads them from cover to cover, you know, analyzes the material, and then reveals, he interprets it in the context of what they're saying as far as design and evolution, and he does this month after month. He's been doing it for years, and I know a lot of top-flight scientists that use his site regularly.
Oh,
tremendous resource.
I'm not a scientist, but I play one on the radio, and that's what we do. David, he's a national treasure. That's what he is.
He is. He's one of the most, you know, underappreciated resources out there. The guy is, and we've been privileged. I've known it. We've been friends for going on probably 30 years now, and we've worked together on a lot of projects, and he worked very closely with us on Living Waters.
Well, and I'm almost finished reading his dad wrote a book on basically an early intelligent design book. I'm almost done reading that.
It was my first exposure to intelligent design, to the arguments of based on the information content of DNA and the making of proteins. That was my first exposure to it back in 1982. Mm-hmm. So his dad was really a pioneer.
And you see that the early echoes of the later intelligent design movement throughout the book.
Yes, it is. He was ahead of the game, and he really was at the time. I didn't, you know, it was fascinating to me. I'd never read material like this, but, you know, I realized as I've been working in heavily with the intelligent design movement for the last 20 years, how far ahead. He was a real pioneer in the movement.
Yeah, and that was in 1972. In your film, Living Waters, I love the fact that in the subtitle, the subtitle starts with the words intelligent design, because it's like you guys are fully out of the closet. You know, I didn't know if early on, well, the debate has matured over these last years and over a decade. And so that early on, you just want people to watch these great Nova quality documentaries about biology and astronomy and just consider the issues. But today, many millions of people know that it's a full on debate. And so why not? It's now a real.
It is. It should be. That's what we've worked and so many have worked for. Mm. I mean, next year is sort of the 20th anniversary of the intelligent design movement as a real movement. It was really triggered by Bill Johnson's book, Darwin on Trial, and it's really been 20 years since kind of a formal, organized movement has been in existence. So, and I've been privileged to be involved with it since 1996.
Well, Illustra.
Lots happened.
Yeah, Illustra has been such a part of it. If you guys keep making films, you know, I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I'm looking forward to the Lord Jesus Christ returning someday. But if you keep making films, Lad Allen, I hope that Paul Nelson is in every one of them.
He's wonderful. I kid him. We've made him the David Attenborough of intelligent design.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he's become Attenborough is the spokesman for the BBC and has been
Darwinism,
for so long, and one of the real foremost proponents of Darwinian evolution in the world. And we've sort of flipped it with Paul here. Paul has been a real spokesman, and especially the last three films we've done. And
his worldview
is quite a bit different, right?
His warmth, you know, you guys, your videos often they're understated in a marvelous way. Like to mention evolutionary biologist Richard Sternberg. When he says toward the end of Living Waters, talking about the evolution of a land animal to a whale, and he says, well, if it's going to take over 100 million years to get just two coordinated mutations, just two, he says, I suspect to go from a wolf to a whale would take more than two mutations.
Slightly more. Exponentially more, right?
So much fun. But these guys, you have such a talent pool to draw from. And you begin the film with Captain Dave Anderson from Dana Point in California.
Right.
And his dolphin and whale watching safari. And so that's the very beginning. And it's just a celebration of life. And then your animation. When you guys, when the camera goes in to the dolphin and you go in through his ear and you examine this echolocation system that is unsurpassed by anything man has ever made. I mean, we can't even touch the dolphin's echolocation system. It's thrilling because you also, if you bring your kids, your grandkids, you also get a bit of an anatomy lesson, and you learn the stuff that really they're not teaching our kids in high school, because this stuff is so powerful on its face, it tends to refute Darwinism.
Well, and we've always, you know, in Romans 1, I mean, Paul clearly writes that God has revealed himself to man through the things he's made. You know, creation is one of the great revelations of God's existence, and we believe that if we show what he's made for what it is, I mean, it doesn't need any embellishment to show what he's done. It is the intuitive evidence for design. Is you got to be really stubborn or blind or deaf or something not to see it. Mm. And if you see it, it's a testimony unto itself. So we go in really pretty good detail and show all the systems involved that, you know, that enable these animals to not only survive, but thrive in their environments. Mm.
And it's a symphony of interacting, sophisticated systems that it's so completely evident that there is no stepwise development of these.
No,
and as
no, it isn't. And it's just compelling evidence in and out. All you have to do is watch it. You don't even need the commentary. Mm-hmm. If you see it, it's just intuitively so powerful that it speaks for itself.
Richard Dawkins, we recently debated a professor of ophthalmology from University of California, Irvine, I think it was, on the evolution of the eye.
Right.
And his arguments and his science were literally about 100 years out of date.
Right.
And then we showed a video of Richard Dawkins with the incredibly difficult issues of the development, if it actually were to evolve, of a vision system. And Richard Dawkins is doing an interview, and he takes a piece of paper, and he says, well, first you get a light-sensitive cell, and then it begins to fold like this to make your retina. You know, it just curves the paper a little.
Yeah, right.
And it's so juvenile, and if you read his books, as I've read his books, it doesn't get more sophisticated than that. These are juvenile, superficial stories that have been told for decades, and they're facing the onslaught of actual scientific discovery.
Right. We believe that the evidence, and as it continues to, I've been at this 20 years in this field, and just evidentially, every time there's a new discovery, it doesn't weaken the case for design, it strengthens it. Mm. And so the deeper we go into the cell or into the cosmos or wherever we're studying, the evidence doesn't, it's not like, oh, there, and now we've proven that natural selection's the answer. No, it weakens natural selection and strengthens the case for design.
Yeah, their arguments are shrinking.
Yeah.
I mean, we're
I love the technology we have today, because you can see things we've never seen before, and things get more and more and more complex, and the elements of design get more and more and more apparent. Mm.
Ladd Allen, we're speaking with the film producer, director of Living Waters with Illustra Media, Ladd Allen. Ladd, your role in the other films, I mentioned them earlier. How long have you been doing this?
Well, like I said, I met Steve Meyer in 1996 and spent a week with him up in Spokane, where he was living at the time, and he kind of laid the whole case for design out for me. Before that meeting, I read a book called The Creation Hypothesis. It was an anthology that included a lot of the key intelligent design guys, including Paul Nelson and Bill Dembski and Steve Meyer. And it said, this just made an awful lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then I met Steve, spent a week with him, and we really, you know, at that point, it was like, well, we need to make a film. And so I figured, you know, we'd make a film. Well, 20 years later, we made a lot of films. And
so you've been involved with
there.
All of these.
I mean, we made Unlocking the Mystery of Life, the film you alluded to in your opening, and then Privileged Planet, Darwin's Dilemma, Case for Creator with Lee Strobel, that really incorporated this kind of anthology, the design arguments. And then we launched out into a trilogy that we envisioned 5 years ago and called The Design of Life. It includes Metamorphosis, The Beauty and Design of Butterflies, Flight, the Genius of Birds, and now Living Waters, Intelligent Design, The Oceans of the Earth. And we wanted to produce films that would be comparable to the quality of BBC and National Geographic, but present a very different worldview. That I have nothing but admiration for the filmmakers at the BBC and National Geographic.
Oh, yeah.
Cinematography is stunning. The editing, the music, they do a tremendous job.
Right.
But all of those films are steeped in Darwinian evolution, natural selection. That is the worldview upon which they're grounded. And,
yeah.
and they have tremendous influence. You can turn on the television any night of the week almost and see one of these films on some channel. National Geographic has their own station. The BBC is the lifeblood of PBS. And you see these films and they're wonderful and you think, well, if they're that well made, then natural selection must be true. I mean, anybody that makes a film that well, it must be accurate. And we felt that we needed to make films that would measure up aesthetically and creatively and at the same time present the argument for design. So we set out to make three films, and Living Waters was the third one, and we just finished that.
Last summer, I got to spend time with Stephen Meyer also because the Discovery Institute sponsored a cruise to Alaska and Real Science Radio. I got to go, and it was just great. And we enjoyed a salmon run up in Alaska. And so, Lad, when I saw that you looked at, you know, dolphins, sea turtles, salmons, humpback whale, it was just so thrilling. And your presentation of salmon and how a salmon finds its way back to its spawning ground is truly extraordinary. And it's a celebration of design and of achievement. Could you tell us about that part of the film?
Yeah, sure. This is a story that's fascinated me for, you know, I did my first work with salmon probably in 1993. The whole story just fascinated me because you've got these animals that certainly are born in fresh water, and then they make their way to the ocean, and their biology changes so they can now survive in salt water for anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 years, depending on the species. And they go into the ocean because there's more food there than there is in the rivers where they're born. And they go into the ocean and they grow to full size to maturity. And then when they're fully mature and ready to reproduce, there's a signal that goes off in their head. They come back. They swim back to the coast. They find the right river that they left from and entered into the ocean, and there's hundreds of rivers from Canada to Washington to Oregon to choose from. They find that entry based on a magnetic imprint of their head, the magnetic field and the coordinates of that river, and then they go in, and when they hit the river, their bodies, the biology changes back to surviving in their freshwater now. They make their trip up the river, can be, you know, sometimes hundreds of miles to find the very creek or the tributary where they were born years earlier, and that's where they lay their eggs. And so they find this by sensing the smells coming through the tributary, the chemical smells in the water, and they follow them like a map.
So if you could just imagine, you know, we talk about the police training a dog to follow the scent of a missing child or a criminal.
Right.
But you're a fish in a stream, a mountain stream, and
right.
it turns out that Chinook and sockeye salmon will travel up to 900 miles inland and climb nearly 7,000 feet from the Pacific.
Yeah, they can't. So depending on where they were born, if they hatched in Idaho or somewhere, you know, they can go that far, exactly.
So when you talk about, well, the fish, they follow the scent up the river and they pass tributaries and they finally get to the gravel-laden stream or pond where they originated, where they were hatched. And you think about that, wow, you know, it's amazing. They must have a really good sense of smell underwater. But then your animation, you go into the fish.
Right.
And you show what is happening with the anatomy, the brilliance of the design. And you could understand that to be able to navigate that way would obviously require processing millions or billions of bits of information.
Oh, that's a very conservative estimate.
Yes.
Yeah, the water is filled with chemicals.
Yes, right.
And they can detect every stream as a chemical signature. It's a little different than every other one. It can be similar but different. That's based on the chemicals in the water, in the soil, in that stream bed. And this chemical signature carries through the water. It's very weak when they enter the tributaries, the headwaters of the stream they're coming in. and it gets stronger as they get closer to home, but they're still detecting chemical particles on the level of maybe parts per billion, certainly, or parts per trillion. It would be like taking an eyedropper and putting one drop of something in an Olympic-sized swimming pool and being able to detect it. But they do that and through this mechanism in their head, and it takes them back literally to the place where they were born, and they have lots of options as they're going upstream. We were at the Fraser River in Canada, which is a big river with tributaries feeding into it from all directions, and the fish we were, it was a sockeye run, the red salmon, and once every 4 years, they have an enormous run, the biggest probably in North America. Millions of sockeye come back from the sea, and they work their way maybe 300 miles inland, that's where we were, to a place called the Adams River, a tributary of the Fraser, and these fish, you know, they're just blood red, and you could feel like you could almost walk across them, their backs, you know, they're so densely packed, but we followed this migration all the way back, and one of the things that happened, and it was very interesting and shows you the unpredictability of making these films and also how God works in very mysterious ways. This was the first film that we used a drone for aerial photography, and drones are becoming more and more popular. They're small radio-controlled aircraft. Ours had four different rotors. It was like a helicopter, but it had four blades. It weighs about 5 pounds. And you mount a small camera on it with a gyroscopic stabilization system and a gimbal and to keep it stable. And we were using it to great effect in this film to shoot dolphins in the Pacific. You could see the whole pod from the air. And we used them, you know, with whales. And with the salmon, we got to where before the salmon entered this Adams River, this 8-mile tributary, they had to pass through a lake. And while they were in this lake, they sort of stopped and they formed what really is from the air is just a wall of fish.
Yeah.
It's crammed together. And you could see just this blanket of deep red
brilliant
in the water
red.
Before they start, get the signal to start going upstream, to really, which is the final leg of their journey. They'll lay their eggs and then they'll die. But from the air, we were using this drone to photograph this wall of fish. And we had gone out there in the morning and really got some spectacular footage. And we decided to come back in the afternoon because the light was different and we'd film it again. And so, you know, the drone had worked flawlessly and we got it up and we got it over the water. And Jerry Harned, our cinematographer, was operating it. I was kind of directing it through a viewfinder, and the drone was probably, I don't know, 300 feet in the air and about a half a mile out from us over this lake, and all of a sudden Jerry goes, I've lost control of the drone. And it's like, oh, this isn't good, and we're, you know, punching buttons, toggling and praying and everything, and we just watch, and we walk, we're running toward the shore, we were inland a little ways, and just seeing this drone slowly settled down, and it didn't crash, it just slowly settled into the water and sunk.
Oh.
And my heart sunk
of
with it.
Course.
You know, and I'm sitting there going, well, this isn't, you know, what we anticipated, and I go, well, what do we do? It's the water's too deep to jump in after it, and you know, it's just like, and then earlier in the day before, there were photographers from all over the world who had come there to photograph this. And there were these guys from Germany that among them, and they had all this, they were diving, they were divers, and they were diving in with the fish and everything, and they had their gear. And I'd met this guy, and we talked, and when we were using the drone the next day, he kind of came over and watched, and he saw this whole thing happen. And so I said, you know what, I got to salvage something out of this. And I really believe God gave me this thought. We had another small camera, that underwater camera, that another one of our photographers was using, and he was about a quarter mile away, and he had it in a river. And I turned to him, and I said, can you help us? And he goes, well, what do you want me to do? And so I said, just wait here. And so I ran down the beach, got the other guy, got the other camera, ran back with it to the German photographer, and I said, will you take this out into the water and photograph those fish for us underwater. It must be spectacular. We can't get out that deep with our gear. And he said, okay. He goes, I feel sorry for what happened here. I'll help you guys.
Yeah.
So he went out there, and I'm thinking, oh, man. I mean, this was a shot we never would have attempted because we weren't working with scuba gear, and it's going to be spectacular if it works out. And so he comes back out of the water about an hour later, and I go, well, how did it look? And he goes, it was worth the price of the entire trip for what I just saw. You know, and I thought, oh, man. Yep. And then his partner, another guy that was diving with him, about a half hour later came out of the water, and he was holding our drone that had sunk in the lake.
Oh, my.
He found it.
Wow.
And so we go ahead, and we get the footage that the underwater photographer had shot for us. It was on a memory card, and we put it in the computer and looked at it, and it looked just great. He just had this wall of fish underwater that we could never have photographed, and I wouldn't have even thought to do it if the drone hadn't gone into the lake.
Yeah.
And you know, I just kept thinking, I'd been studying Job, and famous passage, shall we accept good from God and not accept adversity? The Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. And when our drone went into the water, I wasn't feeling that way, but I kept repeating that over and over again. You know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. And I just trying to feel better. And then the thought came into my head to talk to this guy who I'd never met before. I met him yesterday, but I'd never known him before. I go, will you help us? And we actually, because we got the drone shot earlier in the morning, we really had it. We were just going for it again. We ended up getting material that we never would have gotten because I wouldn't have sort of compelled to ask him to do this.
Lad.
It's amazing.
Yes.
The whole thing.
My producer, I mentioned earlier, Larry Wolf, at that point, we're looking at the salmon in the lake you mentioned, Shuswap, if I'm saying that right.
Yep.
Larry said to me, where do they get this footage from? They must be buying all this footage. This is like National Geographic.
No,
and
we
so for
we
you
shot
to share
it.
That and, story is so, so fun.
We were there for about 6 days, and we had underwater cameras, and then we were shooting.
We only have a few more minutes.
Sure.
With the humpback whale section.
Right.
When Richard Sternberg, who is of Ben Stein fame, the film Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, and was at the Smithsonian for some time, when he starts explaining, and the narrator does, what's involved to go from a land animal to an aquatic creature like a whale. And you guys show the land animal like a wolf, I don't know, it's Pachycetus or whatever, and you show the actual size difference with the humpback whale. You don't have to say anything. It's just so fun to see. And then you start to list all the systems that would have to undergo change, and then you focus in on the reproductive system of the whale, and you see the brilliance of the design and how intricate and sophisticated it is, and how absurd, because there's clearly no step-by-step process that the species could survive to get to the point where it could reproduce.
Right. It's all or nothing. You got to have all these systems in place simultaneously. You can't develop a kidney but not take care of the blowhole on the head. Mm. You have to expand the lungs, or, you know, all these things have to be there together.
Mm.
That's a recurring theme throughout this film.
You know, we were talking also, it's not a topic addressed in the film, but why would the designer, and I believe that's the God of the Bible, why would the designer want all these creatures, sea turtles and salmon, to go back to their own breeding grounds? And so we were talking about that and thought about dogs. And if dogs all bred together without distinction, you'd have all mutts, all mixed breed mongrels. But when you separate the breeding, then you have this wonderful expression of diversity, even within a reproducing kind. So you have this rapid radiation of features because of this type of migratory behavior of dozens of different kinds of organisms.
And there's another important reason, too, that they spread out. If they all just stopped at the closest place when they got in and laid their eggs, there wouldn't be enough food.
Mm.
All the eggs would be laid. But if the eggs are spread out over hundreds of miles,
yeah, thousands of square miles,
out, you know, they've got the food. There's plenty of food to eat.
Yes.
And if there's like an ecological disaster, let's say there's a landslide and a area gets blocked off, well, you know, it's not all or nothing. If all the fish are laying their eggs in one spot and there is some sort of disaster that really strikes and the eggs are damaged,
yes,
or buried or killed, it's far less likely that will happen if they're spread out over the course of the river.
So and that the whole system is robust.
It is. It's very robust, right. And there's a reason for it, and it's because there's a plan and a design behind it.
So again, Ladd Allen, thank you for this latest film, Living Waters. Could you tell us the best way, what helps Illustra Media the most when people want to get this film? What's the best way for them to get it?
Well, there are two ways. Probably the best way for us is to go through our website, livingwatersthefilm.com.
All right.
Livingwatersthefilm.com. Or you can obviously buy it through Amazon.com.
Yes.
Living Waters, Intelligent Design in the Oceans of the Earth. So it's available through both sources. And if you go to our website, livingwatersthefilm.com, there's a lot of background information on the film, film clips. You get a good background on what's going on.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ladd Allen. What an honor to have you on Real Science Radio.
I'm blessed to be here. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And the film is with Paul Nelson and Richard Sternberg, associate producer David Coppedge, among others. At Real Science Radio, we could not more highly recommend this. And one last place to get it is at realscienceradio.com. That's our website. RSR.org is the short version. RSR.org. or realscienceradio.com. This is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Talking about.